talking home renovation and repair issues now on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. My guest in the studio with me right now, John Viner of GDS Associates of Madison, one of our guests today. The other, not here yet, but he'll soon be here, Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. And really pleased to have both these guys come back and be with us. And certainly if you have a question, remodeling, renovation, maybe an energy question, I hope you'll join us at 800-642-1234 or email at talk@WPR.org. John, welcome back.
Hey, thank you, Larry. Always a pleasure to be on your show.
Tell us about GDS Associates so people know what you're up to.
Yeah, GDS Associates, as a whole here in Madison, Wisconsin, works closely with the Focus on Energy program. A major role with them is on doing farm audits and mm-hmm. commercial audits. My role in particular is focused on residential homes. So the team that we have on the residential side are providing nearly 300 energy audits a year. So we're out in a lot of homes, see a lot of variety out there.
Well, we've got lots of people to talk with you, and we'll go to Tom, I think, first. Tom in Wausau, hello to you. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry.
Morning.
I've got a question. I've got a two-story house in Wausau, and when it's very, very cold, 20, 30 below, Wisconsin finest, the top wall on one of the bedrooms shows a little bit of frost right above a window. And I thought, oh, it must be a window leaking or moisture or something there. And I discovered that that frost seeps up over the wall, condensates on the drywall on the ceiling, and then when it warms up, melts and seeps into the ceiling. So I went up in the attic and looked, and what had happened is the wind blew so hard through the soffitting area, blew the insulation back and created a bare spot on top of the drywall. So, well, easy, no fix. So I went up there, pushed the insulation back, recoated the whole attic with 6 inches of insulation. So I had about 12 or 14 inches up there now. And I thought I had the problem fixed. And about three, 4 weeks later, we got another real cold snap. And again, I had water in the seeping down from the bedroom. And I noticed that, the outside was frosty, but at a different couple of different spots. And I went up in the attic and looked, and I still show some frost on the decking, underneath the shingles or the plywood decking. And I don't know what's causing it. When it only happens when it's very, very cold, it gets some frost, and when it melts, it comes down through the bedroom ceiling.
Yeah.
I repainted it twice, and it's going to be a hassle.
Yeah, I'm sure it is.
The next question is, where do I get an energy audit in the Wausau area?
Yeah, so certainly an energy audit or a home performance evaluation through the qualified consultants through the Focus on Energy program, so focusonenergy.com is a good resource. You can look up residential homes and then find consultants. Some things that may be going on there, Tom, is certainly as you noticed and observed was that wind kind of blown back the insulation and made that top plate and that sheetrock nice and cold out at that perimeter.
Right.
So when we put that insulation back, before we do that, we have to put some better blocking out at the eaves to prevent, something a little bit more solid that isn't going to blow out of the way.
Okay.
So we'll call that blocking at the eaves, but we have to be careful not to block if there's venting out at the eaves that we don't plug it entirely. That's why there should be what they call proper vents, some styrofoam chutes out in every rafter bay that's stapled to the underside of the roof decking. And then the blocking fits up between the top plate of that wall and the proper vent.
Okay.
So that's going to take the brunt of the storm as the wind blows, and then we can put the fluffy, lightweight insulation back up against this blocking. This blocking can simply be a piece of fiberglass bat rolled up, and maybe it's stuffed in a plastic bag and shoved back out into that eave, but it's kind of friction fit in there, and then we put our insulation back is one way to do that.
All right. Good luck. Thank you very much. Yeah, thanks, Tom, for calling. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And Chad Spade joined us. Chad, hi.
Hi. Glad to be here. Sorry I'm a little late.
Oh, no problem at all. Your name came up the other day, as a matter of fact, on our program when we were talking with Ed Begley, Jr. You were a presenter at the Dells recently.
That's correct. I gave a presentation at the conference this year, actually on the work that John and I have done together. doing home performance evaluations and improvements in conjunction with remodeling projects. And it was a case study looking more carefully at about five projects that we've done and the impact that both the recommendations and the final results of the home performance related work had on the projects. So it was interesting.
And fun, I bet, from the sound. Sounded like a great conference. So.
It is. It's a great—we always learn a lot. My entire staff goes up almost every year. We were all there this year, and we all get a lot out of it and always learn something.
Well, Jim in South Range has a question for you guys, so let's go to Jim. Hi, Jim.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call. I have an insulation question and a siding question.
Okay.
I want to take off the siding on the house. It's old, it's tattered, and the woodpeckers have been banging on it. The cedar siding.
Okay.
I want to take that off and use it for another project. But then when I put on new siding, I plan to put on 2 inches of styrofoam onto the chipboard that's there, and then side by nailing through the styrofoam. I'll block the bottom so that I have solid wood at the bottom. But is it necessary for me to put strips on top of that styrofoam? That's one question. The other question is, when I take the siding off, I'll be exposing a felt paper. That was back in the days before Tyvek and so on, back in the early 70s, and it's all tar paper underneath the siding. Should I remove all that tar paper and put on Tyvek? Should I leave it there? Because it's not going to fall off when I pull these nails out from the cedar siding. That'll come off very easily. So those are my two questions.
Okay.
Yeah, Jim, those are a nice project you got going there. I like the 2 inches of foam on the outside. We can do that, and we can do it effectively, and that's what's going to take these days to really get the energy use down in our home. So I applaud you for that. That's excellent. When it comes to the furring strips you mentioned to go over the outside of the foam board, and then you would put your siding, I think that really is probably a best practice to absorb or be able to provide a plane or an area back behind that siding for water to drain out, because we're going to assume it's going to get back there at some point. The all cladding siding material is going to leak eventually at some point, and water that gets back there, that's going to allow it to dry. So I think the furring strips are a good way to go.
And how thick should furring strips be? 3/4? Is that enough, or should I go with a full 2x4 plank?
No, 3/4 is fine. And then we would allow that piece of board at the bottom that you were going to put there. We might leave some weep holes in there or a space for it to drain. So if water gets back there, it doesn't accumulate on that bottom piece that you've suggested you were going to put on.
Oh, I see. Yeah, I didn't want mice or bugs or whatever crawling up through.
Right.
Maybe a screened kind of something that'll let air in there.
Yep, I think that's fine, because that's, you know, our thermal, it still is, the insulating value is going to work for you, and if we're going to put those furring strips on, which are designed to let water, bulk water that gets behind the siding, run out and run down your foam sheeting that you're going to have there, we got to have some place for it to go.
Okay, and the question of the tar paper removal? And
what do you think, Chad?
Well, the tar paper you could leave up. The tar paper is actually as effective if it's in good shape as the newfangled Tyvek and similar materials. Tar paper does keep the water out, and it does allow for vapor to pass through. I do want to ask a couple of questions about your project. I didn't hear what type of siding you're putting back up.
And I'm putting a wood siding back up.
Okay, a new wood siding. Okay. So it is...
Or possibly cement.
Okay.
That's my other choice.
Well, either one of those options, I would agree with John's advice on using the furring strip and having that rain plane. And the only other thing I wanted to ask you about is how well insulated are the wall cavities in the home?
The wall cavity is 2x4s.
Mm-hmm.
And... Back in the 70s, I had this brainstorm of putting furring strips, horizontal furring strips, in paneling. So I actually have 3.5 inches of insulation, foil back insulation to the inside with a 3/4 inch air over the top of these three-quarter-inch airspace. So it's an inch and a half thickness of wall on the inside with 2x4s with foil face facing in. There's my vapor barrier, 3.5 inches of Corning glass.
Is the foil taped, or how is it?
It was attached to the Corning fiberglass insulation.
Oh, okay. Understood.
Then the space. And then, right. So, yeah, that question of that tar paper, whether we left it, we certainly wouldn't put anything back there. My only question would think to see whether it would hurt anything. I might simply remove it because it's not really doing anything for us at that point underneath the 2 inches of foam. And then if you were going to use a house wrap to the exterior, then that would be applied over the foam, which is an option for you. And sometimes that house wrap over the foam, it's not necessary to always do that. It's done both ways. But an advantage to that house wrap over that 2 inches of foam is that you can provide a little bit of flashing detail around the windows and doors by lapping that and flashing using the Tyvek or the Tipar. Exactly. Lots of products out there.
Yes, and I plan to replace the windows, so that would be a good idea.
All right.
Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. You can join in, too, with your home renovation, repair, or energy question at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. Jerry in Rib Mountain up next. Hi, Jerry.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 40-year-old shack up in the Minocqua area of Wisconsin. It's on a concrete slab. My problem is I got major ice damming. I have T111 on the outside, and it goes up the outside solid to the overhang of the roof decking, the plywood. There is no soffits or anything like that. And up in my attic, I have the water pipes running along with the ductwork, because that's the way it was built, being the concrete slab. And it's just fiberglass insulation tucked up into the roof joists. So what I'm thinking of doing is either I could take out the fiberglass and just stuff it full of like styrofoam insulation, or would I be better off building soffits on the outside and drilling holes through the T111 and to get some venting in there, then use some furring strips on the roof decking in between the joists to, like, say, a half inch, and then put maybe my total of 4 inches of styrofoam insulation, if you guys can understand what I mean, and then also put a ridge vent in.
So that those furring strips, was that to the inside of the roof or to the outside?
It'll be to the inside, underneath the roof decking, and then I'm thinking that the styrofoam would fit in there securely enough to make my channel of air moving up and down.
Yeah, I guess with the ductwork and water pipes up there, we just wouldn't go with a ventilated attic. I think we would just rule that out and not try to punch more holes in the attic and get that colder and then have to deal with preventing frozen pipes and inefficiencies with that duct system. So, and it's a 2x4 roof rafters right now?
2x4 roof rafters. So would my best bet, I mean, I'm trying to get it as, would I still be better off taking out that fiberglass insulation and using rigid styrofoam tight in between my rafter joists? I think it would give me a better insulation quality.
Yep. And we might consider even furring that out to get an R30 or something in there. If we have 3 inches of R5 per inch foam board, right, we're 15 up on that roof deck. So that's, we'd like to double that, where we'd put more furring strips just to build the thickness of those foam board out a little bit. Or we go to a spray foam, right, where we get an R7 per inch.
Would that be a close? Should I use a closed cell spray foam then?
Yep, go with a closed cell spray foam, and then get that all the way down to over the top plates of those exterior walls. And you know, you've got 3.5 inches there right now, so you're up to 24 R25 somewhere in there, which is getting up there for what you got. Is this a full time residence?
No, it's just something we go up to on the weekends to get away.
Yep.
And it's heated year-round to 45 degrees with a forced air furnace.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, right now, well, probably not right now, but in the middle of January, there was probably ice damming 3 feet back and 8 inches thick. And I usually keep roof cables on it, hooked to a Christmas tree light timer to go on 5 hours a day. That eliminates my problem of, you know, seeping into the house, but doesn't eliminate the damming problem completely. I'm trying to fix that without the roof cables.
Yeah, I think, we'd like to get an R30 or something or better up there just to know we've prevented that ice damming. I suppose that damming occurs maybe when you head up there and turn the heat up. I don't know if it shows up or is pretty large when you get there, keeping the house at 45 degrees.
No, it's pretty large all winter long, whether I'm up there or not. So, like I say, that was the way it was built when I bought it. I'm just trying to figure out the best way to improve the problem.
Yeah, the foam board is a more probably a do-it-yourselfer type approach that if you've got room to work and get big sheets of foam up into that attic, well, then that works for you. If it gets kind of tight and hard to work, maybe a spray foam and an applicator coming in and spraying foam is a good way to go. And then make sure to inspect that duct system up there for leaks, because even when that furnace is coming on, you're likely dumping a little more heat than you need to into that attic space.
Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Dan in Wausau, we're on to you now. Hi, Dan.
Hello. I would like to find out where I could get some good information on R and U values of windows, either one, because they're the reciprocal of each other. But window manufacturers are typically not real forthcoming with that information. I'm looking to install some ultra-efficient windows in the house, as long as I have to replace them anyway, and just don't know where to start looking for them.
Hmm.
Well, you know, Dan, practically any window company that I'm familiar with, if you go onto their website, you're going to be able to get those specifications, because I believe it's the National Fenestration Council that
yeah, you can go to the National Fenestration Rating Council, NFRC.
Right.
They're going to be the independent laboratory that's going to test the windows. And not all windows are tested to their standards. They have to pay a price to do that, so we want to look for windows that have been tested under the NFRC rating label.
Is their website just NFRC?
Yep, I just went online and typed in NFRC, okay. And it popped up.
All right, thanks, Larry.
Okay, well, I'll start there then. I have been on several websites where they're claiming their windows are ultra-efficient, but there's no actual U or R value listed at all.
Yeah,
They list the glass, but not the entire window system.
Right, right. So it's certainly good to do your research there and look for that Energy Star label and something that's been rated by the NFRC Council.
And I'll just add, since we're talking about the subject of U-value on windows, Energy Star windows have been a rating of 0.35 or lower, or I should say, or better. Recently in the energy package, we just learned up at the conference that the rebates are going to be tied to a slightly more efficient window of 0.30 or less. And so I think we're going to see window manufacturers scrambling to improve the performance of their glass to meet that slightly better standard.
Hmm. Yep, so that's a federal tax credit that you would look for. And if you can meet those standards, so get those specifications for that standard and try to meet that.
And thank you very much for calling. And the stimulus package that's coming out, we really don't have all the data on that. We don't know what's going to happen in terms of tax credits for a number of different areas, but there are going to be some.
Yep.
Definitely for 2009 and 2010.
And hopefully Wisconsin will certainly get their share, and I think there's a good likelihood that they'll go to energy improvements and for residential customers.
Right.
Let's go to Dan in Montfort next. Dan, hi to you. Thank you for calling.
Yes, I got insulation with my foundation, wondering how to do this. And what I have is my foundation around part of my house is poured concrete, and so maybe 30, 40, 50 years ago it was poured. Mm. But on the inside of my house, I get frost when it gets really, really cold outside. And there's cracks. There's a small crack. And I'm wondering how I can insulate this, whether I insulate the concrete on the inside of the house or on the outside of the house. And on the outside of the house, the foundation only is exposed up about 3 feet, and then it goes down into an angle down to about 2 inches. And that's the part of the foundation I don't know how to insulate it.
Well, Dan, generally, it's best if you can insulate from the outside. You're going to get the best performance because that poured foundation is a huge thermal mass. You know, the cement will retain and give off, radiate whatever heat capacity it has. And so if you can buffer that from the elements and make it more a part of your interior environment, that will perform better for you year-round. And generally, if we were building a new addition or building a new home, we'd be looking at having 2 inches of continuous foam board all the way down to the footing. John, do you have thoughts on that frost? Because that's...
Yeah, where's the frost?
Yeah, you said there was a crack in the foundation, so maybe there's some air leakage and some cold air coming
through.
Where
the crack is, I shouldn't have even brought that up. There's cold there, of course. It's in the corners of the foundation. Like I said, on the outside of the house, if you're looking, not standing on the outside of the house, to see the exposed foundation, it's probably about 3 feet on one end, and then it narrows down to about 2 inches. And that crack, like I said, it's this minute. I shouldn't have even said that. But it's in the corner where there is no cracks, nothing like that. Be in the corner, I get frost on the inside of the house. And that's why I'm wondering if on the outside, if this concrete is flush with the steel siding, how I'd be adding to that steel, to the concrete, 2 inches of foam, and then that would be, it wouldn't be flush with the side of the house no more. Is that what I would do and just deal with that not being flush anymore?
Well, you would want to put a piece of flashing over the top of the new insulation board, both to protect that top and to make sure that you're getting the water is flowing from the siding over and around the insulation. So
okay.
You want a little bit of a pitch on that piece of flashing, and it should get tucked behind the siding itself.
So
okay. So what my question would be, okay, I'd put 2 inches of foam insulation on the outside of the house. Would I screw that directly to that concrete? And then how far below the soil line should I dig away and put the foam insulation?
Yeah, as far as you can. So we want to get at least a foot to 2 feet if we can excavate there. I guess before we want to make sure that if it's air leaks that are making the concrete cold and frost is the issue, we want to make sure that possibly we can seal those air leaks from the interior up by the rim joist, maybe where the sill plate is, or maybe there's not a sill plate. If there's cold air coming in there and dropping along the inside of that foundation wall, it's making it cold and could be causing that frost or contributing to that frost. So before we go to that foam board just to solve that problem, we should also look at air leaks above that foundation wall to make sure that there's no air leaks coming in.
Okay. All right.
Okay. Thank you.
Thanks very much for calling, Dan. Appreciate your call. Chad Spade, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison, and John Viner of GDS Associates Madison, our guests today as we talk home renovation and repair. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. If you have a home renovation, repair, energy question, I hope you'll join in at 800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. And Kristen in Menominee Falls is up next. So let's go to Kristen. Hi, Kristen.
Hi.
What can we do for you?
Okay. Well, you have to bear with me. I don't know much about this stuff at all. But we have about a 50-year-old home with a concrete block basement. And half of that, we have one long wall that seems to be the problem. It's on the south side of our house. Half of that is finished and half of it isn't. And the area that's exposed, we started to notice some cracking, and we called, and we found that it was bowing in a little bit, but less than an inch. So a couple people recommended that we put some bracings up. Half of it was covered with paneling, wood paneling. So they said, well, take the paneling down and see what you have under there. When we did that, we found that we have a lot more significant problems, that there's actually bowing in about an inch and a quarter. There's a huge crack going down from the ceiling sort of to the floor. And so I have a friend who served in the business and said you could, you know, when you dig out, when you have to go on the outside and dig down and then put the rock in, that you could do that on the half of the wall that is the problem, but the area that doesn't need it, just do the braces like they had originally recommended. What do you guys think?
What do we got there, Chan?
Foundation repair is always a tricky business. You know, certainly doing some bracing on the inside can often address the problem if you can give up the space and you don't mind having that protruding into the space. Typically, the footing is going to extend underneath the slab about 4 inches, and so it's possible to still be bearing on the footing and to do additional bracing from within. But it has to be looked at and done carefully. And if there are things on the outside which are contributing to this failure, you'd want to address that as well. You know, if there are tree roots or something that are growing into the home, or there could be a variety of explanations. There could be grading issues and washout. So it's important to assess the problem, try to figure out what's causing it, as well as doing some things to help stop and perhaps repair the damage.
We wound up in our home with the nasty little surprise of the one wall leaning in, which we didn't notice either, and we wound up having to put a new wall in, basement wall in. Took the old one out and put the new one in, braced it and put the new one in. So,
whole new poured concrete foundation.
It was block, yeah.
Block, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But it's expensive.
No, it's all right. It can be expensive.
Is it reasonable to do half of the wall? If half of the wall is really where the problem is, the other part is, you know, under that inch, you could just brace it. Just do the area that is bad.
Well, yeah, I mean,
we're slow to respond here.
I would say that you know, once you get into it, you probably it's going to be most cost effective to replace as much of that wall as having problems. I mean, if to do it piecemeal will be more expensive, but again, not having seen it to know. I mean, it could be that the part that's most dilapidated is all that needs to be repaired. It's a tough call to make, but it will definitely be less expensive to do it all at once.
Yeah.
And then just very quick, do you guys recommend having like a structural engineer come in? Do you think it's
yes
worth the cost at this
yeah.
point? Yeah.
Yeah, you'll get okay. a good piece. You'll get some good advice then.
Money well spent.
Yep. Okay. All right. Good to know. Thank you very much.
Yep. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Lori in Oconomowoc, your turn. Hi, Lori.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Okay. Let me give you a little bit of context. We have a 3.5-year-old house. We moved in 2006 in the summer. In the winter, we started noticing it's in the center area of the house where the ceiling is kind of separating from one of the walls. And there was about a 4 to 5 inch little crack. So that summer, we did some spackling and painting and repaired it, thought that was going to take care of it. And this past winter, we noticed it starting to get worse again. It seems a lot more cracked, and the crack is getting longer. It's starting to be on both sides of the wall now. And we also noticed that it started in the second floor. Now we're noticing it kind of in the same area of the house on the first floor. So first question, what's going on and what can we do? And then second question, what kind of repair person would we call to come and fix it? Because obviously our little Band-Aid jobs aren't working.
What was the, is this a brand new house, a 3.5-year-old house? Is that?
Yeah, it was brand new.
You know, what you're probably experiencing there is something, I believe it's called truss lift, which is...
Uplift,
yes, thank you, John. Truss uplift, which essentially has to do with the fact that most newer homes and a lot of additions, we utilize trusses, which are very resource efficient, a webbing of small wood, often 2x4, to create something that's very rigid and has a lot of structural integrity. But then the bottom of it, that horizontal ceiling part of it, is where we insulate the home. And so what happens is you can imagine all the wood that's up in the attic above that insulated shell gets very cold in the wintertime, and it contracts. And when it contracts, it actually lifts up that lower ceiling joist just through the process of it kind of contracting. And so it's just simple physics, and it's powerful. Now, the best way to overcome that is when the drywall was installed, if it had not been, if the ceiling drywall had not been screwed in or nailed in along the perimeter of the rooms, then it would be able to allow that truss to lift, but the joints at the corners might stay together. And that's something that's just often missed. It's actually a situation where less is more. You would think the drywall contractor might be negligent or trying to cut corners by not attaching along the corner, but it actually is the appropriate way to do it and anticipate this problem. And John, would you add anything to that?
Yeah, I don't have anything more to add. I do see it on occasion. I think there are things called truss uplift clips that allow some expansion, that as we repair the sheetrock or the damage area, we put it up similar to what Chad is talking about. And there's some clips that allow some movement. So it is pulling down and repair work to do it a little bit different. I don't know all the ins and outs of that truss uplift. I just have to admit that, and how we can do it. Some homes we can insulate, and if we air seal the attic, we don't have problems at all. And it can be identical, two different houses, and one has it and one doesn't. I'm stuck. I think we're going to have to go with Chad's recommendation there.
Okay. So what kind of repair person would we call to even look at this and see what they can do?
Well, you know, if the screw heads are making themselves kind of known in their location as this pulls apart, then literally, you know, someone who's a drywall contractor would perhaps be able to remove those screws. Actually, it wouldn't be too difficult to find the screws and remove them, and then perhaps put it back together. And you would have to see. I mean, it is a situation, and I think as John suggests, there might be a need for some air sealing as well that will help potentially mitigate the problem. But it's a lot like a roof leak. Sometimes you think you found the problem only to discover that, well, it must be coming from somewhere else, or there's something else that explains this. And so there isn't a silver bullet that necessarily will fix this.
So I think having a home performance consultant identify air leakage within that building, air leakage from the house into that attic. So while we're tearing things apart, we know that the framing assemblies of the walls and ceilings are tight. We've done everything we can to stop moisture transport into that attic, air leakage into that attic. It's insulated properly. That's going to increase the chances of that repair having a longer fix.
All right. Okay. Good luck.
All right. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. And Mary Ann in Kenosha, we'll turn to you now. Hi, Mary Ann.
Hi. I've been waiting a long time for this show to be on.
Okay.
We have we need some more insulation in our attic. I have a house that's approximately 100 years old, and we were up there last summer, and we saw that there was insulation in the attic, and it seems to be about 4 inches thick, maybe.
Okay.
And it seems to be, I'm not sure, but it seems to be made out of wool, some sort of wool.
It could be. It could be rock wool.
Okay. And we need to put insulation over that. And this runs perpendicular with the rafters. And it's in the rafters.
Okay.
Is that the right word to use, rafter?
Is it in the roof system, the insulation?
No, it's in the attic floor.
Attic floor. Is it a closed floor or
no,
a wood
it's
floor?
Open.
It's all open floor.
Yes, it's all open.
You got 4 inches of rock wool or material inside
right.
there. And
now,
we
my
just...
question is that it seems to have the paper side up.
Hmm.
And shouldn't that be toward the heated part of the house, toward the...
Typically, yes. But I think that if we're going to insulate over the top, we can leave it as is.
I'd like to leave it as is.
Yep.
And so I think that, and I just want to run this by you, I should be using unfaced insulation over that. Is that correct?
If we're going to roll out fiberglass bats,
yes.
It's going to be unfaced. And,
okay.
And we want a good... at least an R30 to R40 on top of that bat. We want to have a significant R value over top that existing paper-faced bat to keep it nice and warm.
Okay, and how thick would that be?
Well, I think 10 inches is...
Oh, my gosh.
10 inches
more?
Well, I was going to say a little bit more than that, personally. Mm-hmm. 10 inches is going to be around an R30, 35. But we might want, I like to get an insulating value of 50 to 60 in that attic space.
Mm-hmm.
And minimum code is R38. So if you put an R30 bat down right now, you might just meeting minimum code acceptable standards. So we want to go above those minimum standards and add another R11 to an R19 on top of that. So if we can get an R40... R40, 44 over the top of your 11, then you're up to a good 50, and you won't have to do that again.
Okay, and then, so would we run this horizontally over the rafters or still stay perpendicular?
Well, I just wanted to add, and I know John was probably going to mention this, but it's really important that before you add any insulation that some air sealing is done wherever there are... plumbing pipes and chimneys and other things kind of protruding into and through that attic space. It's
yes.
really important that things be properly sealed. There are certain materials that have to be used in certain locations. And I don't know whether you've got old knob and tube wiring in the home.
No,
but,
they've taken that out. However, the knobs and tubes are still
there.
That's okay.
Unconnected.
Yeah. Yep, that's fine. That's not a problem. But
okay.
You don't want power going through that old wiring and then do any air sealing around it. But but it is very important to do that air sealing. And then if you are going to use the bat insulation...
what is the alternative to bat insulation?
Well, the alternative would be a loose fill material.
Oh, no, we're not going to do that because the wiring goes up through the attic and down the
mm-hmm.
walls.
Okay.
Through a pipe chase or whatever. Is that the right word?
Yeah.
Sure.
Okay, and sometimes people have to go up there to work.
Okay.
To do, I think we have an antenna that's hooked from inside the attic with different things that have to be done from inside the attic. It's a huge, huge attic, probably 10-foot ceilings.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, those bats will give you that option to move it aside and put it back a little
right,
bit easier.
Right, and it'll stay clean up there.
Yep, so where that all those wires come through, that's where you might need some air sealing, though.
And what
so,
do you yeah. use to seal? Is there something special?
Well, there's for larger holes, sometimes expanding spray foam product is good,
oh,
but
okay.
if you got a big hole, it might need some kind of fill material, a backer, before you apply that.
And then would you put like a caulk?
In smaller cracks and seams, we would use a caulk. In larger ones, we'd use an expanding spray foam. And we'll do that and apply it in a way that maybe we keep the wires kind of pushed out of the way while we do that so we don't make a mess of things along that with those wires.
Okay. And my second question is, how far from the edge of the eaves do we stop with the insulation?
It's got to be over that exterior wall. So you go as far as the wall of the of that top story and insulate over that top plate.
Mm-hmm. Good luck.
And then stop right there.
Yep.
Okay,
yep.
Thank you very, very much.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it. Chad Spade and John Viner, our guests today. Chad, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. John Viner of GDS Associates of Madison, our guests here on the Ideas Network. If you'd like to join in our conversation here as we talk home renovation and repair, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email at talk@wpr.org. And let's turn to Diane in Appleton next. Hi, Diane. Thanks for waiting.
Good morning.
Morning.
We live in about a 55-year-old home, and we've had air sealing done, okay? But we're thinking about remodeling our basement, and currently we have the false ceiling. But we would like to take that out because, well, we just want the basement to be higher or, you know, a taller ceiling.
Sure.
And the thing is, we have a spancrete first floor that has a basement underneath it. And I was wondering if either of you have ever seen that before and how to deal with that. We have numerous wires because when we need to do something, you drill one hole through this, I don't know, 8 inches or whatever of cement. And so we have wires kind of all over the place. I don't know about spraying it or, you know, any suggestions with that?
Well, you know, that's interesting. You know, we've worked on homes over the years that have had spancrete under a garage or under a front porch. I don't think I've ever been in a home that's had it over the entire, you know, that the main living floor was spancrete. So
nothing that moves, trust me.
Oh, I believe it. That's, you know, the concrete home or the walls traditionally framed, or is it a concrete home?
Down the basement?
No, up in the main level. Because
it's regular up
there.
Okay. Yeah, it's just regular.
Well, I imagine you want to have perhaps drywall as your finished surface. Is that the goal?
That might be. Right now we have paneling with rigid foam behind it, and I think we'd have to, you know, maybe take that out because right now it stops right at the ceiling. And if we go up higher, then it would be missing, you know?
Right. How much space is above your dropped ceiling up
probably
to
about a foot.
Okay. So there is an opportunity to gain quite a lot of space.
Right.
You know, typically in a wood frame construction, we will typically put drywall up in a basement remodel in large part because it just improves the aesthetic and
right.
It also maximizes headroom. And if down the road you need to gain access someplace to run a wire or deal with a leaking pipe or something, drywall is actually relatively easy to repair and fix. So, you know, and frankly, it's easier to repair drywall than it is to replace an old drop ceiling panel that's no longer available. So, but as far as you're going to have to provide furring strips to hang some sort of material, and so, you know, that's going to present some challenges. You know, it's possible to attach to cement, certainly. We do it all the time, but it's definitely a little bit harder to do. And up on the ceiling there, you know, gravity will be working against you. So, I would say it's definitely possible to improve this, but, you know, we'd have to look at it.
Yeah, take a little looking at.
One more thing. Would you suggest, if we ripped the current paneling out, would you suggest foaming the walls?
There's no insulation on the foundation walls right now.
Yes, there is. There's rigid foam.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. Yeah, spray foam is certainly a high insulating value or per inch. Foam board is a common approach. So a foam product is preferred, and a foam product that's continuous with no seams, gaps is the best practice install on that foundation wall.
Mm-hmm. And I have to recommend the air sealing. We think that's made a huge difference. Plus, it keeps critters. We think our home is better critter-proof.
Yeah, we don't even charge extra for that. When we...
Okay.
All right.
I want to add, we were joking up at the a conference in the Dells that with all the stimulus money and the incentives for weatherization, we wanted to suggest a five-year moratorium on insulating and just have people air seal their homes, because that's often the missing detail. A lot of contractors offer insulating, but they're not thinking about air sealing, and that's really what's most important.
It's huge. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call, Diane. And we'll turn to Dale next. Dale, hi. Thanks for calling. Dale and Toma.
Hello.
Hi. What can we do for you?
Well, I have two problems.
Okay.
The first problem is I moved into an older home that was refurbished, and new windows were installed. And I come to find out now that whoever installed the windows, I believe, installed them improperly, because I'm getting all kinds of air draft around the windows. And when I consulted with the fellow that I actually got the home from, he says they were professionally installed. What do I do, or where do I start to find out what the problem is?
Well, we call it a blower door test. So this is a tool that helps us, a tool and a process that is very definitive of determining what leaks and where it leaks. So sometimes it's the windows and the sashes that leak. Sometimes it's around between the rough opening, between the rough framing and the window jamb, so they can put replacements windows in, and that might be nice and snug and not be a problem. But because we didn't take the time to do a full replacement, and it's a legitimate way, it's a good way, we can get a good install with replacement windows, but if we don't do it where we can get after those jams and do the air sealing.
Now, is this done per room, or is it done for the whole house?
For the whole house, we set a big fan up in the doorway of the home, depressurize the entire structure, and walk around and look for breezes. We're going to feel a breeze wherever there's a leak. Ideally, we have a thermal imaging camera that also helps us to identify leakage, which is a tool that's very nice to help us find that leakage if it's between the jamb and the rough opening.
Now, where would I go to get something like that? I know that there are some energy companies that do that, like NSP. I know they do that.
Yep. So we would go to focusonenergy.com. That's the statewide program, and they have a great training initiative for consultants and contractors to be accredited through their program.
Okay.
And you can find, there's a search page. You can put in your county and zip code, and you'll get a list.
Okay. Get a list of people.
Okay. And my second question is, in this same home, I have hardwood floors throughout my whole home. And in the basement, my question is, would that make the floor warmer from the basement standing coming up if I was to put insulation in between the joists in the basement?
Well, of course, every house is different, but generally the best practice that we recommend is to insulate the foundation walls, and that can be done from within. It's, you know, often it's more difficult to insulate the exterior because that involves excavation. But if you insulate the exterior wall, is it a full basement downstairs?
No, there's crawl spaces, and then there's I would say half is crawl space, half is basement.
Okay, but all the crawl space is accessible from within the basement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Generally, it is best to, and is there a dirt floor in that crawl space? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So there's an opportunity to put down a vapor barrier on the floor of that crawl space so that we don't have any moisture rising up from that dirt. And also, if you happen to have radon in your neighborhood there, which is a very common soil gas that we don't want in our homes, that will be at least partially mitigated by putting down the plastic, and then if that gets sealed up with foam board or spray foam onto the exterior walls of the crawl space and the basement, then that would be the best way to insulate. You do have to, in the in the crawl space, you can do certain things that you can't do in the fully excavated basement, because we have to have a fire stop over many of the foam materials that we would use. But it's still a better way to insulate and address the problem of cold floors.
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Talking home renovation and repair issues today with Chad Spain and John Viner. Give us a call with your questions at 800-642-1234. I'm Larry Mueller here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking home renovation and repair issues today with Chad Spade of Chad's Carpentry here in Madison and John Viner of GDS Associates in Madison. They come by every so often to talk with us about home renovation, repair, and energy kinds of issues. And we have lots of callers online, so we'll go right to the phones and to Matt in Green Bay. Matt, hello.
Hello, gentlemen. Good show again, as always.
Thank you.
Thanks. Real quick question on basement wall. We're looking at remodeling our basement. We've got poured concrete foundation walls. It's about 2 years old, so everything's pretty well cured, et cetera. Now, doing research, I get 15 different methods of insulating the basement walls. One is put the Bisqueen on the concrete wall and then build your stud walls out from there and then back insulate. Well, the other method is build your stud walls, put your insulation in, Bisqueen it. That I don't like because of the mold growth. What is the best way of insulating basement walls for a basement remodel project?
Well, many years ago, we were putting the plastic up directly onto the cement. But the best practice, as far as I know now, is to not have any vapor barrier in that wall, so that if there is moisture in the cement, it will be able to pass through the wall. The physics of a home is such that down below grade in the basement, water wants to drive into the home generally, and you want to allow it to do that. If you stop it at any point, you might be driving that moisture into the plate of the exterior wall, or you might be allowing it, as you say, to just get absorbed into that interior wall assembly. Certainly, putting Bisqueen up on the inside of a basement wall is a recipe for disaster. You do not want to do it there. Generally, what we prefer to do is to frame that interior, it's an exterior wall, but frame the inside there, and then apply a closed-cell spray foam. We generally will put our framing approximately an inch away from the poured wall, so that the foam is sprayed behind the studs or in between the studs and the cement foundation wall. And that gives us continuous foam, really good air sealing, really good thermal performance, and the added benefit of locking all of those studs essentially into place, relative to that cement wall. So it gives you a really sturdy, well-insulated wall.
Yeah.
Two quick follow-up questions on that. So the spray foam takes the dew point and shoves it into the middle of the concrete wall, in effect?
You could say that. It pushes it to the exterior. We're going to make that concrete wall cold. That's why in the wintertime, to avoid condensation, that's why the spray foam needs to be continuous and monolithic, so there's no seams or gaps at the corners or edges. And then we eliminate the source of moisture from the inside of our house ever reaching that concrete surface.
Okay, the other question then is, would it be advisable to spray the wall down first and then put the studs up? You lose the advantage of locking those studs as a monolithic kind of structure.
Yeah,
you would get a better seal on that wall spraying it prior to framing it.
You could do that. You just lose floor space, so either way is going to work.
And then the quantity or the inches of spray foam to put on, inch and a half, 2 inches, 1 inch?
Yeah, that 2.5 inches is going to be great.
Okay.
What can you get away with? I don't want to drop tons of coin on the spray foam. You know,
yeah,
I mean?
we want a minimum in our value of 10 on that foundation wall minimum. So that's about an inch and a half of closed cell spray foam to 2.5 inches.
All right. Would you backfill then in between the studs with standard fiberglass insulation?
You know, since I don't like working with fiberglass, I'd probably just leave it alone. I probably wouldn't add that extra, especially if I – then I would probably go for 2 to 2.5 inches of the spray foam, leave the studs open, run my wires, and keep it clean.
Yeah, I would agree.
All right. Thanks a lot, Matt, for calling. Appreciate it. And Michael in Madison, your turn. Hi, Michael.
Hi, guys.
What can we do for you? Whoop. We lose Michael? We must have lost him. Maybe the battery went dead. Let's go to Kathy in Fish Creek. Kathy, hi to you.
Hi. Good to talk to you.
Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a 14-year-old house. It is 13 feet high, one level. And down the middle of it, I have a floor, a wood floor, and then it's leaving, it's gapping between that and the little half-round thing that holds up the carpet, which is not carpet. So it's like 3/8 of an inch and seems to get worse every year. And I also am having cracks along the top and kind of in the center of the house. Do I have a problem?
So this happens in the winter time?
No, it's there all the time.
It's there all the time, and you've it's
so the floor is sinking.
Well, you know where the half round comes down to the floor, and then I have a wood floor, and the wood floor is lower. The reason I say this is that I can see this big gap between the floor and this half round, and it's open and things get stuck in there.
And that gap's getting larger?
Yeah, it's getting larger.
So this is at the baseboard. The shoe right. is separating from the wood floor.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it's down the middle, kind of like the load-bearing wall. And it's nowhere else but just that wall.
Well, it's a little mysterious. I mean, the way a house would typically be built, those interior walls would be bearing directly on the floor. And so if the floor were falling, then the walls would be falling with it. I'm trying to imagine how it might be built differently that might explain this. But,
I mean, I guess the obvious
I don't know. I have a studio, and it's in my studio and just in one area.
Could the shoe just not be fastened well enough, and that's what's actually moving up and down and not the whole structural assembly?
I doubt it. The things are nailed in, aren't they?
Well, you never know what happens up there.
Yeah, you know, sometimes what happens, because the you know a lot of trim is put in with compressed air guns and people just go, you know, slapping things in, and maybe it didn't... You know, there are techniques to use with those guns to make things hold better, and it is possible. And I've seen it many times where particularly that particular trim piece will pull out over time, and it could just be that that piece of quarter round is working its way up, and it just needs to be refastened.
Okay.
That would be great news, because that'd be a really simple fix.
That'd be really good news. That'd be really good news. So what would you do?
If it isn't that.
Well, what would you do if it is? You just take it off, or what? How do you?
Well, the trim could. I mean, one of the things. I mean, I don't want to diminish the potential for something else going on that might be more serious. So, though, again, I'm having trouble imagining what might explain that. It's the likely cause is a loose piece of trim. But even if there isn't, even if the floor has fallen a little bit and it's due to somewhat unusual construction technique, provided the house isn't. Failing in some way, and it's just a little bit of settling, the nice thing is that that trim is designed to cover that gap. So if the trim were reinstalled so the gap disappears or is diminished, then you've pretty much fixed the problem. Again, if it's just a little settling and not a major structural problem, and likely it is just a little settling or a loose piece of trim, then that would be the easy way to fix it, and hopefully that solves your problem.
I think you got it, Chad.
All right.
Okay. Also, I have a roof on my and it's only 14 years old, and it was like a 30-year warranty, and I found out that this roof has had a defect in for like 3 years. Of course, it was the years I bought it, and it's lifting up. How long can I go without having problems?
The roof is lifting up?
Yeah, the little corners are lifting up.
On the shingles.
On the areas where the sun is hitting.
So the roof, the shingles are curling.
Yeah.
Okay. Shingles are curling.
I was wondering if the roof was lifting up that shoe.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, something totally different, too. All right, so what do you think, Chad?
Yeah, well, that is a problem. And, you know, one of the things with the curling shingle is that often, I mean, you're going to have to tear it off to re-roof. And generally, we would not recommend ever having more than a second layer of roofing if the roof is in need of replacement and it's in good enough condition, it's flat, that a layer can simply be placed over top. Once they start to curl, you don't have that option. There may be some sort of a warranty claim still possible there. It's hard to say.
I already did that. Just trying to figure out how long I can go with before I have to replace it.
Yeah, really difficult for us to say without that inspection on site, and then any preventative measures that need to be taken, such as proper attic ventilation, all takes that on-site visit to know for sure.
So you need to get somebody in there to take a look at it.
I wouldn't wait until water's dripping on your ceiling.
No. Do it sooner than later, Kathy, and thank you very much for calling. Roger and Gideon, or Glidden, excuse me, you're next. Hi, Roger.
Hey, how you doing there, Ian?
Great. Thanks for calling.
You got your drafting table out? I'm in the planning stages, and I got a whole bunch of questions there.
Well, let's see what we can do here.
We'll make some room here. What do we got, 30 seconds, Larry?
There you go. Hey, I'm going to add on a living room to an existing house that's got an 8-course block basement, 8-inch block, and my thoughts are, rather than jack that house up and disturb all the remodeling we did to the point, is just go with frost walls and footings on the addition, backfill with sand inside and out, put in slab heat, and put a slab on that. Now, should you put the slab inside the frost walls or let it float on top of the frost walls? Because aren't you going to get a significant amount of expansion with that in-slab heat?
Yeah, so my suggestion is going with that slab alongside, butting up to that footing and separated by a piece of 1-inch, 2-inch rigid foam board, so that we have a nice thermal break between the concrete slab and that footing. So instead of, if we lay it on top, then we've got, you know, heat can conduct through that slab, especially when we're heating it to 100 degrees or 90 degrees with that radiant floor, and it'll zoom right to the perimeter out your footing and right to outside.
And, of course, insulating beneath the slab is also really critical.
Well, wouldn't you do that anyway with the in-slab heat? Don't you lay down 2-inch foam board?
Absolutely, but I just wanted to mention it because I didn't hear you say it.
Yep, so build a little box to pour that concrete inside, you know, on the sides.
And another question. Now, if you use slip forms, you insulate the outside of your footing, or your frost walls. If you use those styrofoam forms they got now where you build 2 foot up at a time,
right?
That's styrofoam that stays with the form inside and out. Would that then be a problem, or should that be the way to go, have it inside and out of the wall?
Well, there's nothing wrong with using one of those insulated concrete forms, but in this application, it's going to be challenging because you need to create the ledge and then allow the room for the insulation and the thermal break between your slab and your footing. You know, because the footing is thicker than your wall up top, and so you know, there are construction details here that make using the ICF, I think, a little challenging. We haven't done a lot of work with that, so you know, I'm probably not the best person to ask that. It's often hard to utilize in a remodeling context, but
would a guy too have to pin that poured foundation to that block foundation horizontally?
Well, there should be a good there should be good pinning done to tie the addition to the home, certainly.
So they ride together, innit?
Yep.
Somewhat, yes.
No.
Okay, that helps me out, Terry.
All right.
Good luck.
Thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate it, Roger. And Michael in Madison, it's your turn. Hi, Michael.
Yeah, my battery's up now.
A
little while ago. Hey, I got two questions for you guys. By the way, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Two questions. I'll give you the easiest one first. I have a home that I bought about 3 years ago, and we found a small leak in a wall where I guess it was tied the forms up from the outside, and it's leaking when it's a lot of rain in that area. Is there a way of sealing up from the inside without having to dig out the outside to seal it up, the foundation?
Well, it might be possible to seal the leak from the inside, but keep in mind that going to the outside is always going to be more effective because that's the source.
Right.
There are hydraulic cement patches which can be applied from within that will help resist the pretty significant pressure, right, of the water on the outside of the foundation wall. So, you know, if it is possible to do a little digging out there and address it from the exterior, I think you're going to have a better long-term fix. But, depending on landscaping and other issues, you may have to resort to just an interior fix. It's also possible, I'll just mention, to sometimes put in a drain tile on the interior that is connected beneath this to a sump if it's something that you really cannot, due to a variety of reasons, address adequately due to, you know, possibly trees or other landscaping features.
It would be difficult to get to. It's under a deck, so it would be really tough.
Right. So that would be the, you know, kind of worst case scenario, but it would allow you to put in a system that would deal with occasional water infiltration. And, of course, that system could be functional on the entire perimeter of the home.
Okay. Secondly, there was an addition put onto this house prior to me getting there, and I was aware of some of the construction habits that the guy did. He did put a frost wall all the way around, and it is a slab type of foundation. And he did put in foundation keys when he poured the slab.
Yep.
And but what's happening now is the building that addition is actually pulling away from the house. What can I do, who can I contact to do to get that replaced, or can it be pushed back in place and reattached or somehow? Or
so the way you are observing this is there's a crack in the floor where the addition meets the.
Right. There's a transition strip that goes into a dining area from into the sunroom, and it's pulling away. It was tiled all the way through, so it's almost an inch apart at this point.
Hmm.
And also on the ceiling, you can see where it's actually kind of dropping on the far end is dropping down. So on the ceiling where it's tied in, you can see where the tape is starting to pull away and crack. So it's pretty apparent that it's taking place. Plus, the windows are out of adjustment at this point. It's surrounded by windows all the way around in the sunroom.
You've got some bad settling going on there, it sounds like.
Yeah,
and so, and of course, that could be due to a variety of factors. There could be soil conditions that were inadequately addressed when the original foundation was poured. It could have just been that they left disturbed soil under there or something fell into the hole before the pour. And then, it sounds like a tough thing. That's not easy to fix because, you know, the foundation is what it all's on. So,
that's important part, yeah.
Yeah.
So is there a company that specializes in that that you know of, maybe?
You're in Madison, right? Yeah.
Actually, where the house is in Partyville.
Yeah, all I can refer back is to the NARI Association. There's a lot of quality remodelers that I'm sure have handled this types of situations. So the NARI Association, remodelingmadison.org, you can find members there, and I would look at some of their specialties.
Okay, all right. All right, well, thank you very much for your time. I love listening to you guys. Yeah, I get all kinds of good information.
All right.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Tough problem there. Jim in Oconomowoc, it's your turn. Hi, Jim.
Hey, how's it going, guys?
Good.
Good.
Hey, I've got an early 1950s house that was built with concrete block walls. It has furring strips put on that. They're probably about 1.5 inches. And then it has about 3/8 drywall and about 3/8 plaster over that. Now, I'm in the process of replacing the electrical boxes and wires, and we cut out about a 12-inch square section out of there, and the insulation is just falling apart there. Now, when we put the new boxes and the wiring in, how do we re-insulate that area so we still keep a good vapor barrier?
We're not so concerned about a good vapor barrier necessarily on that foundation wall. With 1.5 inches of space, it gets pretty difficult to insulate that wall without removing the finished material. And at this point, rather than try to blow a fiber insulation up against a block wall, I wouldn't do that, and I would just take the energy penalty for less risk and more durability on that project.
Okay, but this is a first floor. It's not a foundation wall.
Oh, I thought you mentioned it was a block wall. So
it is a block wall. It's
okay.
But the house was built with a basement and the first floor out of concrete block wall, and then they insulated the first floor with the furring strips and drywall and the plaster.
Yeah, I guess the same theory applies here, and we can't apply or blow a fiber insulation against that cold concrete, whether
okay.
It's below or above grade. So we're removing things. There are, you might find a spray foam applicator that they've been trying to come up with a spray foam product that can blow into closed cavities like you have, and they're out there that will do that. It's a special foam. Not many will do that I know of in the Madison area. But somebody that might know, you might try Middleton Insulation. Give them a call. I think they're very knowledgeable over there about the variety of foam products.
And with that, we have to conclude for the day.
Right.
I thank you guys both. You guys both have websites, right? You have ChadsCarpentry.com, ChadsCarpentry.com, and GDSAssociates.com, correct?
Correct.
GDSAssociates.com. Right. And you guys will be back, won't you?
Absolutely.
All right, great. Thank you so much. Chad Spate, owner of Chad's Carpentry in Madison. Again, that's ChadsCarpentry.com. John Viner of GDS Associates. Go to GDSAssociates.com for some more information about John. And thank you very much for listening. I'll be gone a couple of days. Jim Packard filling in for me tomorrow. He talks with Dick Zondag of Jung Seed Company. Stay with us. Lots in store.